You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
As the US and Israel's war on Iran continues, Iran has continued to keep the Strait of Hormuz closed, blocking a fifth of the world's oil trade. As oil supplies shrink and demand increases, prices have jumped across the world, including in Aotearoa. With fuel prices rising amidst a cost-of-living crisis, questions have been raised as to what the government has done to reduce prices for New Zealanders. This week has also seen two groups, Lawyers for Climate Action and the Environmental Law Initiative, taking the government to court over what they claim is an unlawful policy for tackling climate change. As the government continues to promote tree planting as a way to offset emissions, opponents say we should instead focus on emissions reductions. Finally, this past week has also seen the report released from the second phase of the government's COVID-19 inquiry, to strong responses from most of Parliament. While the report's findings were mostly balanced, with a mix of praise and critique for the government of the time, many politicians have seized it as fuel for their party's agenda on the COVID response. For our weekly catch-up with the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March, I asked about each of these issues, beginning with cost of living. Finance Minister Nicola Willis has warned that living costs could increase further due to the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Given the government's track record on cost of living, are you confident that they'll be able to support the public through this?
What I am particularly concerned about is that while we know that the poorest get hit the hardest when inflation rises, whether it's due to a war or, for example, a pandemic, that this government seems to not have laid out what a targeted and equitable approach to dealing with the fuel crisis would look like. And we back the calls from economists like Susan St. John, who have put out sensible proposals that would help support low to middle income families during this crisis.
You've recently criticised the government for inaction on supermarkets. Willis said all options were on the table for dealing with the supermarket duopoly in March of last year. Have we seen any of these options explored?
No, we haven't. And one of the problems that we have is that during this time that Nicola Willis is just hoping that the supermarkets will just turn down their profits and lower their prices, that not much has happened. If anything, the price of vegetables and mints has gone up by crazy amounts. And there are things that the government could be doing, like taxing the excess profits of supermarkets and redistributing that to our communities, splitting the duopoly and supporting alternatives to supermarkets so that growers can take high directly to consumers in the form of urban markets, etc. These are all things the government could lay out. Instead, we're just hoping that the giant supermarkets will stop putting profit over people, which is clearly not happening.
And so if we're thinking about the Green Party's policies on this and also on broader cost of living concerns moving into the election this year, what would be the main differences between how the Green Party would tackle things compared to how the government is currently looking at addressing these issues?
Yeah, and we hope we'll have more to say shortly on what our response to the current crisis will look like, so keep an eye out. But what we've long stood for is ensuring that no one lives in poverty, which is why we campaigned on effectively an almost universal payment for families so that they can have enough to make ends meet. It looks like tackling the supermarkets duopolies, huge profits by taxing their excess profits and breaking the duopoly, but it also looks like investing in the creation of tens of thousands of jobs in manufacturing and construction so that people can actually see themselves staying in this country as opposed to seeing Australia as one of the few places that they'll be able to have a stable job and housing.
Also this past week, we've seen a legal challenge against the government's climate plan go to court. Do the Greens share the concerns of those bringing the case forward, and what are those concerns?
We absolutely back champions taking the government's climate failures to court. These concerns stem from the fact that shortly after taking the reins, the government basically U-turned a bunch of climate policies. And we're now paying the price for that. And the problem that we have is that this is not just some abstract issue around meeting emissions targets. It's about whether we have a resilient economy that is adequately set up so that we can be protected for extreme weather events. So, whether we have homes that are away from flood-prone areas, whether we have a resilient and affordable public transport system, and whether we have, for example, enough solar panels in our public buildings and in our communities so that we're not so reliant on fossil fuels that lead to high cost of living pressures when we have a fuel crisis as we're doing right now due to a war. And so we back the people taking this to the court, and we obviously back them from a policy standpoint and committed to bringing back a lot of these climate policies should we change the government.
And we've seen, the Green Party's response to, or I guess plans for climate change and the national government's plans for climate change seem radically different, not just at a policy level, but also at the way that these groups think about the issues. What's the reason for that, I guess, fundamental difference in the way of thinking about how we deal with emissions and how we react to climate change?
The way we see it is that reacting to climate change is also reacting to the cost of living crisis. And we've long supported the science around climate change, and the evidence tells us that the longer we not take action, the more expensive it'll become and the more it'll cost to people's livelihoods. We've seen this in the Auckland floods, and it should have been a wake-up call for us to do more to better protect our communities from extreme weather events, whether it is by making sure that we green out spaces around areas that are flood-prone, that we intensify neighborhoods while actually moving some houses that are in flood-prone areas so that we can sponge up the rain. But it also looks like investing in rail, whether it's city rail or regional rail, so that people can have better forms of transport. All these things are not just good for climate change and tackling it, but actually also good for people's pockets. And the government seems hell-bent in making us more reliant on fossil fuels, which is clearly not working, especially now that we're being hit by a fuel crisis.
And especially given it's an election year, we've seen some criticism of the Green Party in the past, and we're probably going to see some more again this year, for its focus on social issues, which some say is coming at the expense of a focus on environment and climate policy. What would you say to these concerns?
The Green Party sees the interconnectedness of everything. We cannot address the environmental crisis without addressing poverty, and we can't address poverty if people do not have access to healthy rivers, drinkable water, and healthy kai because of soil as well. And we've long shown our commitment to environmental protection policies through the emissions reduction plan that we packaged, which is an alternative to what the government is doing, and in a green budget that shows that we can create thousands of jobs to restore nature by supercharging the Green Jobs Program, and so Jobs for Nature Program, sorry. And so it's absolutely possible. And I always taken the stance that environmental policies and politics without taking a class analysis to it is just gardening.
Lastly, I want to talk about the COVID-19 inquiry phase 2 report. What does the Green Party make of the results of this inquiry second stage?
Yeah, look, the report talks about how we, comparative to other countries, did have a good response when it came to public health approaches, and that we did save countless of lives. There are some lessons in the report for us to take in. So, for example, how we can be better prepared for future pandemics, how we could look like at better use of data and information. These are all things that we absolutely are behind. Concerned that most politicians from the government seem to have been fixated on issues around the length of the Auckland lockdown, which are, yes, lessons that we can take, but actually does not help prepare us for future public health crises. And so when we had an opportunity to contribute to the debate in the House after the report came out, we put out a call for the government to, for example, prioritise clean air policies, which will protect people against COVID-19, which is still here, but other respiratory diseases that make workers have to take sick days off, prevent kids from being well enough to go to school, and things that are just common sense. So our response lies on using the best available data and evidence around public health, and it's a good platform for us to all be pushing for things like clean air policies, which will prevent people from getting sick, for example.
Yeah, you mentioned a bit of it there. When the inquiry or when the report came out, almost every political party in Parliament at the moment made a big song and dance about it, you know, with media releases claiming that the inquiry supports their angle on the government's COVID response. The Green Party, as far as I can tell, was pretty unique in that it was one of the only parties that didn't make a big show about talking about this. Is there any reason for that? I guess, how does the Green Party fit in with what these other parties are up to?
Yeah, I got to contribute on the debate that happened in Parliament at the time when the report launched, and it was wild to me to see that politicians were fixated not on the substance of the report, which was in and of itself quite balanced and acknowledged that there's a lot of things the government could do to better prepare us for future pandemics. And that's concerning because we should be learning from history. This isn't the first pandemic that we experience in the past, you know, century for that matter. And so we should be taking the pulse from the report to actually improve our public health so that when the pandemic hits us again, we're better prepared so that we do not see what happened this time, which is that inequality shot up, material hardship for children increased during the pandemic period. The government at the time, and we were critical of it, failed to address the wealth gap that was growing while companies were making huge profits. Everybody else was told to tighten their belts, and many families struggled. There are things we can improve upon, but we need to be led by good evidence and a public health approach to tackle these, not by political point scoring, which it seems is what was the focus on after the release of the report.
And the Labour Party, in advance of this year's election, has already announced the key parts of their health policy package. The Green Party and the Labour Party, they seem to have some overlap and some complementary, I guess, policies, given that a lot of people assume that the parties would join a coalition together if elected. In speculation, what would the Green Party's health policy look like going up to this election? Is there much overlap? Is there... what's it going to be?
Yeah, look... We support greater access to healthcare. Obviously, that's something we have in common with the Labour Party. But fundamentally, if you see our Green budget in our 2023 election platform, we also want to challenge some of the norms that have been put in our healthcare system for quite some time. And that includes, for example, the fact that services like dental care have been left to the private sector to run. And we do have cases in which dental care was run for profit, as well as GP services in some instances that are now being run by corporates. One of the things that we fundamentally want to challenge is this idea that people should have to pay exorbitant amounts for things like dental care in order to being able to keep their teeth well and their mouth well, which is why you'll see us campaigning for, you know, as we have done in the past, on issues like whether health services should be brought back into public ownership and whether they should be free altogether, which probably will go further than what Labour is proposing, which is three free GP visits.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March speaking to me about the cost of living, an environmental suit against the government, and the second phase of the government's COVID-19 inquiry.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.